Hey, howdy, space nerds. Well, we're back with a new episode exploring space exploration, but we can't do it without you. This podcast is supported by the listeners of WMFE, a public radio station that relies on listener contributions to keep going. We're raising money to support the programs coming from the station, like Are We There Yet? And we could use your help. Help us out. Give us a gift of financial support online at WMFE.org/support. And as always, thanks. From the studios at WMFE in Orlando, Florida, this is the Space Exploration Podcast that asks the question, are we there yet? Hi, I'm Brendan Byrne. To crew or not to crew? That is the question. Well, that's the question NASA's acting director Robert Lightfoot is proposing for the next Orion mission. As you know from listening to this podcast, Orion is NASA's next human spacecraft that will take astronauts beyond low Earth orbit into deep space, first to places like cislunar orbit, and ideally it'll eventually go to places like Mars. Well, the next flight of Orion is atop the Space Launch System, or SLS, and that's slated for launch in November of 2018, uncrewed. But Lightfoot asked if there's a chance the agency could get astronauts on that mission, called Exploration Mission 1, or as we'll call it, EM-1. Now, NASA doesn't have an answer yet, so I had to ask someone else. Chris Gebhardt is the assistant managing editor at NASASpaceflight.com. He co-wrote a piece on the possibilities of a crewed EM-1 and what that mission might look like. Chris, thanks for joining us.
Great to be here.
Well, Chris, let's start first. Before this this memo was sent out, what was the EM-1 mission slated for, and what were they hoping to find?
Yeah, so the EM-1 mission, as it still is slated to be a roughly 3-week mission that'll see the Orion spacecraft, the European Service Module, and the Block 1 version, the initial version of the SLS rocket, launch into low Earth orbit initially. The Orion and EM service module will then undergo initial checkouts in low Earth orbit before the second stage performs what's called the translunar injection burn, which will send the spacecraft and the service module off on a 5-day cruise to the moon. When it arrives at the moon, it'll pass approximately 62 miles above the surface, and using lunar gravity will actually enter a 40,000-mile retrograde orbit. Retrograde meaning that it's actually traveling in the opposite direction that the moon is spinning. From there, Orion and the service module will stay in orbit for about 6 days undergoing checkouts of the various systems before it'll fly by the moon again at a distance of roughly 60 miles, and the European Service Module will then fire its engine on the Earth return trajectory burn, which will take Orion back to Earth in about 5 days. It'll separate from the European Service Module and re-enter Earth's atmosphere at approximately 25,000 miles an hour, which will cause temperatures at the base of the heat shield in excess of 5,000 degrees Fahrenheit. For those keeping track, that's a lot faster than the Exploration Flight Test 1 of Orion re-entered the atmosphere back in 2014. And if all goes to plan, Orion would then splash down in the Pacific Ocean off the coast of California for recovery and refurbishment ahead of EM-2.
So even without a crew, this is quite an exciting mission for NASA and getting back in deep space exploration.
Yeah, and it's really meant to pave the way in terms of as many of the systems that will be ready for Orion and the European Service Module to really test them out in the, beyond low Earth orbit environment, and sending it to the moon in a high lunar orbit trajectory, which is what it would be in, will really help benefit the testing of Orion in a couple of ways in terms of testing how its radiation shielding responds to two passages through the Van Allen radiation belts and what the radiation exposure inside the spacecraft actually is. Right now, NASA is designing the craft so that this 21-day mission will basically expose astronauts to the same radiation levels as a 6-month duration stay on the International Space Station would be.
So putting a crew on this is quite gutsy then. I mean, I'm thinking back the last time we've had a crew-rated vehicle outside of low Earth orbit was the Apollo missions, right?
In fact, the very last one was the Apollo 17 mission in December of 1972.
So, with this memo from acting director Lightfoot and Gerstenmaier saying they're going to look into it, what are some changes that need to happen to the capsule? What are some changes that need to happen to the mission profile? And can this be pulled off?
Yeah, so I think let's talk about can this be pulled off in terms of the challenges that would be present right now. So right now, the EM-1 mission is scheduled to launch in September or November of 2018, though that is likely to slip into 2019 at this point due to the readiness of Orion, the European Service Module, and the core stage of SLS. But it's not just the readiness of those of the capsule, the service module, and the rocket that's going to be the big challenges here. One of the huge challenges is that Orion for the EM-1 flight will not actually be flying with a fully functional life support system.
That's not good.
No, that's kind of a critical component when you're talking about putting astronauts in a capsule for 3 weeks. And just, you know, sort of a basic overview of the environmental and life control systems that were deferred from the EM-1 mission to EM-2 include things like air revitalization, fire detection and suppression, crew module pressure control, waste management, emergency communications, recovery communications, audio systems, suits that the crew would wear, food systems, an active launch abort system, and the actual ability for crew and piloting support for Orion. So all of those are rather huge undertakings that were deferred from EM-1, specifically because the mission was never designed to carry a crew in the first place. So you have those elements from the life support system. You also have the issue that the second stage that the SLS will use on EM-1, called the interim cryogenic propulsion stage, which is actually just the second stage of the currently in service Delta IV rockets, is not actually rated for human spaceflight. It was purposefully not human rated due to funding levels for EM-1, again, because EM-1 was never designed to carry a crew. You also have some rather significant design changes to Orion from the exploration flight test that occurred in 2014. Several systems in Orion that were not included on that flight because of weight savings and schedule issues. You also have a new design in how the heat shield is being constructed for the actual, flight-worthy Orion and crew-worthy Orion. And you also have this issue of the astronaut office and the aerospace safety advisory panel being pretty dead set against putting a crew on a completely untested vehicle, which is what not only SLS is, but also what Orion and the European Service Module are.
So lots of challenges that a crewed mission would face if it were even to move past the planning stages, right?
Exactly. It is worth stressing that the initiative from Acting Administrator Lightfoot is just a feasibility study, looking to see, is it possible? And if it is possible, what would it take? What would the costs to changing the mission this close to its launch date be? Could we even perform the mission as it is, currently planned, a lunar orbit mission? Or would we have to change that? And really also, what's the schedule impact here? I mentioned earlier that EM-1 is most likely slipping into 2019 to begin with because of hardware. But, it's worth noting that all of the deferred life support equipment that isn't flying on EM-1 is currently on a development track for the EM-2 mission, which is not scheduled to launch until the 2021 to 2023 timeframe. So there are a lot of questions about how far to the left we could actually pull all of that. And of course, all of that is dependent on funding from the federal government to actually accelerate those timelines.
You kind of wrote some of the mission profiles that couldn't possibly occur. Can you walk us through what we might see if they're able to get over these hurdles, if they're able to get the life support system in there, if they're able to get the second stage certified, if they're able to get the heat shield right, what would a crewed EM-1 mission look like?
Yeah, so there are basically three options to what that would look like. One is that it would be the EM-1 mission that I outlined before, just placing a crew on board. And that would basically just be what the current planned EM-2 flight is. EM-2 has been planned for a while now to just basically be a reflight of EM-1, this time with a fully functioning Orion and a crew on board. So that's one option. Another option is what's being called the EM-2 hybrid. And that would involve launching Orion and the European Service Module and the interim cryogenic propulsion stage after human rating it, first into low Earth orbit. After the first orbit, the interim cryogenic propulsion stage would burn its engine to raise the orbit of Orion to about 250 by 44,000 miles. That would place Orion into roughly a 24-hour orbit of Earth. At that point, the vehicle would discard the interim cryogenic propulsion stage and perform a one-day checkout of all of Orion's and the European Service Module systems. Now, this would provide some margin of safety for the checkout phase of Orion in that if an issue does crop up, we could either remain in that 24-hour long orbit for another day while troubleshooting takes place, or if the issue was severe enough to warrant termination of the mission, Orion could simply burn its service module thruster and come back to Earth. But if under this EM-2 hybrid phase, everything in the checkout orbit goes fine, the European Service Module would actually be used to perform the translunar injection burn. And that would place the Orion capsule on what's known as a near free return trajectory, meaning that minimal input from the thrusters and the engine on the service module would be required to actually bring Orion back to Earth. It would basically be slingshotting around the moon.
So it wouldn't hang out there for as long as the current EM-1 plan is, right?
Exactly. Under the EM-2 hybrid plan, Orion would go to the moon in a free return trajectory, slingshot around it, passing the moon by 38,000 miles, so significantly farther out than the 62-mile goal for EM-1. It would then perform a minor, what's called return trajectory adjustment burn, and immediately come back to Earth. So instead of a 21-day mission, we'd be looking at a 15 to 16 day mission. And the reason that number is so high, because obviously during the Apollo program, you know, it was a 4-day transit to the moon and a 4-day transit back. But under this hybrid option, the European Service Module wouldn't have an engine powerful enough to actually get Orion to the moon in a 4-day window. It would take a little longer.
Gotcha.
So that's the EM-2 hybrid option. Now, what we're seeing a lot of chatter from inside NASA about is the option that would basically have EM-1 perform a crew rotation flight to the International Space Station. So that would see the full-up SLS with the interim cryogenic propulsion stage, Orion, and the European Service Module launch into low Earth orbit and go to the International Space Station and actually rendezvous and dock with the outpost. There are a few benefits to this over the EM-1 and EM-2 hybrid options, the first of which being you're in low Earth orbit, so if something doesn't go right, you have a very quick opportunity to come back to Earth. You also have the option for safe haven on the International Space Station for the Orion crew should something go wrong with a system that would prevent the crew from being on board during reentry, if something goes wrong with the heat shield. It's the safe haven option that was employed in the shuttle program after the Columbia accident, that the station would be able to support the Orion crew until a commercial vehicle like Dragon or Starliner would be able to come get them. Now, the big con for this one is that using Orion for a crew rotation flight would probably be an excuse for lawmakers to further cut funding from the commercial crew transportation program from SpaceX and Boeing. And it's also not a great utilization of the SLS rocket. Basically, what this mission would be is asking a rocket that's designed to propel craft, you know, a quarter of a million miles away to millions of miles away to Mars, to the far reaches of the outer solar system, to basically just go 200 miles up and deliver Orion. Mm-hmm. And in order to do that, NASA would actually have to add tons of ballast weight to the interim cryogenic propulsion stage to actually weigh down and strip away some of the efficiency that SLS has been built to maintain. I was thinking about this morning, and a good way to think about what this mission would actually be would be to think about being asked to design a car that, with 8 minutes of pedal to the metal acceleration, gives you enough power to then coast from Miami to Los Angeles to deliver a package. And after a decade's worth of development and integration, a year and a half out from that mission, being told, okay, well, we still want you to use the same system. You still have to accelerate for 8 minutes because that's how the vehicle has been designed. But you're only going to deliver the package to Orlando, Florida, instead of Los Angeles.
Yeah, so that's kind of a lot of power for a mission that doesn't need that much.
Exactly.
So, I mean, could the case be made that, you know, that might be a good interim mission because it both satisfies Acting Administrator Lightfoot's desire to crew that first mission, and also we're starting to see some rumblings of from the GOA's office that there could be delays in those commercial crews. Could that be something that can fit in the middle there and get astronauts to the space station without paying for Russian seats and still be able to crew that Orion spacecraft?
So it could definitely satisfy some of the desires to mitigate crew safety on the maiden voyage of all of these components if we did actually put a crew on there. I would be very hesitant to say that it could help, you know, mitigate the gap between commercial crew transportation on the Dragons and Starliners, primarily because right now those missions are set to perform their first crewed missions next year in 2018. And the first flight of SLS is slipping into 2019. And with the need to actually have a fully functioning life support system, and would most likely push that a little further out from 2019 into the 2020 range, to actually put a crew on Orion. So we'd actually be talking about the first crewed Orion mission coming about 2 years after Starliner and Dragon are transporting crew to the ISS. And again, that's under the current funding levels,
right,
for everything.
Now, that brings up a good point. Is this just kind of a money grab by Lightfoot here, or is it a way to get SLS in the spotlight as a new administration is starting to look at NASA and starting to look at the future of NASA?
Yeah, I would say personally, from my perspective, that, you know, studying the feasibility could be one of two things. It could be a way of just showing once and for all that, no, it isn't possible to put a crew on Orion and SLS in the first iteration. What the rockets have been designed to do, what we need to test them to do, isn't conducive to putting a crew on in the first place. I'm not sure it's necessarily a money-grabbing scheme, because the money that would be needed to advance some of these systems would be rather significant, somewhat on the magnitude of a 50% increase in total funding for just one element of SLS, not the entire program overall. And even with that extra money, there would be no guarantee that we could actually advance some of those schedules quick enough and safely enough to meet a launch date within the current administration's first term in office. So, you know, this does kind of indicate that there were some questions from the new administration and maybe from congressional sources as well as to if this could be done. But, you know, without any confirmation, it's kind of hard to say exactly what this is, aside from just there was a meeting, someone asked the question, and now we're going to go off and see if this is even possible. But, you know, another thing is that when Lightfoot announced this initiative last week, there was no timeline given as to when this feasibility study would actually be completed. So, you know, whether this is a very quick and easy assessment of no, we can't do it based on current funding levels, or if we're going to see a 6-8 month, you know, feasibility study that we don't see the results of until October, you know, or the latter half of this year, is really anyone's guess at this point.
Now, Orion, in the grand scheme of things, this is a system to, between Orion and SLS and the ground systems, this is a way to get people to places like cislunar space and to Mars. If you speed up this timeline here and something bad happens, you know, say that there's a setback or a disaster, how does that play into the overall mission to Mars?
An excellent question. You know, if I would answer it this way, if EM1 proceeds as it is currently planned without a crew, and something goes wrong either with the launch vehicle or with Orion or with the European Service Module, it's a setback, but it's a technical setback. It doesn't derail the program or bring the type of negative attention that would come to it if we had, let's say, an Apollo 13 style or worse accident with a crew on board. You know, potentially rushing into the idea of putting a crew on a vehicle to either say that SLS is a little further along than it actually is, or to say, hey, look, we can actually do it on the first mission. And then having an accident or, you know, God forbid it is a disaster occur on that would raise a lot of questions about, do we really even need SLS? And what is its role in the larger scheme of things? I could personally see, you know, a mishap or a disaster with a crewed version of EM1 being very quickly the end of SLS as we know it is right now.
So, Chris, I'm going to ask you to pull out your crystal ball or your magic eight ball or whatever you use to wildly speculate here. November 2018 rolls around. What do you see? Is it an uncrewed EM1 or is it a delay for a crewed EM1 in 2019?
So I think November 2018, looking at a crystal ball, we are still 6 to 12 months away from the first EM1 flight of Orion, based on where all of the systems seem to be progressing right now in terms of the core stage, Orion and the European Service Module. And I say that as the current version of EM1, there are a lot of indications that this will not take place in 2018. So I think in terms of EM1, I think the crystal ball prediction, and if I were a betting man, is NASA returns a verdict that if we want EM1 to happen before 2021, 2022, it takes place as an uncrewed test flight of the entire system.
There you have it. I'll take your word, Chris. Chris Gebhardt, he's assistant managing editor at NASASpaceflight.com. Thank you so much for speaking with us, Chris.
Thanks, Brendan.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode. Be sure to check out the full write-up at NASASpaceflight.com and follow Chris on Twitter. Lots of great space news coverage from the folks at NASA Spaceflight. Support for Are We There Yet comes from the listeners of WMFE. You can follow the show online. We're on Twitter at AWTYMars. Or reach out to me in the Twitterverse. I'm at SpaceBrendan. You can also send us an email, arewethereyet@wmfe.org. And please leave us a review on iTunes. That's how more people learn about this podcast. Are We There Yet is a production of WMFE. Our theme music was composed by Kevin McLeod. I'm Brendan Byrne. Thanks for listening.